For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. U.S. President Donald Trump will announce whether the United States will withdraw from the Paris Accords on climate change. From Washington, our correspondent Simon Marks has a preview.
The clock is ticking. Even top White House advisors say they don't know what the president will announce. He could pull out of the Paris Accords altogether, seek to stay in but scale them back, or, and this would be a surprise to his supporters, reverse course altogether and vow to implement them. The White House has been besieged with pleas to stay in from world leaders, environmentalists, and corporate executives. But the buck stops with President Trump. Simon Marks, Washington.
President Trump has officially delayed the moving of the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. From Washington, Giles Gibson reports.
In a statement released on Thursday, the White House was keen to point out that this is a delay and not a permanent decision. The question is not if that move happens, but only when, said the statement. The White House also says the decision to delay was to maximize the chances of a peace deal between Israel and Palestine. President Trump repeatedly promised to move the embassy during the presidential campaign and recently traveled to Jerusalem to meet with Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Giles Gibson, Washington.
British politician turned media contributor Nigel Farage says a reported connection to the FBI investigation into links between the Trump campaign and Russia is, quote, fake news. From London, Ollie Barrett reports.
In a statement, Nigel Farage says he's been laughing at the Guardian article and says it's an hysterical attempt to associate him with what he calls the Putin regime. The former leader of anti-EU party UKIP says he's never been to Russia or had any business dealings with the country, though he admits he's made a appearances on the Kremlin-backed Russia Today channel. Mr. Farage says he thinks it's extremely doubtful that he is, in fact, a person of interest for the FBI. Ollie Barrett, London.
The United States and Japan have begun 3 days of naval exercises to put pressure on North Korea to stop its ballistic missile program. Our U.S. correspondent Nick Harper reports.
This is the first time Japan's Navy and Air Force have held exercises with two U.S. aircraft carriers. The USS Ronald Reagan and USS Carl Vinson, along with their 8 escort ships, will join the 2 Japanese vessels. In the air, above the Sea of Japan, Japanese F-15s and American F-18 fighters are simulating combat missions. Tensions have increased over recent months over fears that North Korea may be preparing to carry out its 6th nuclear test. Nick Harper, New York.
44 migrants from Nigeria and Ghana died of thirst as they tried to cross the Sahara to Libya. Campaigners say the journey across the desert is as dangerous as the boat sailing the refugees from Africa to Europe. This is FSN.
And thank you very much, FSN. A good evening to you. It is the 1st of June, and the weather is appropriate. Glorious weather in South Manchester. It's gorgeous. Very warm though, very sticky, very muggy studio. 1st of June, summer is here. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Welcome to the program. I've had a very difficult day, it must be said. I suppose as far as difficult days go, there are people who've had much more difficult days. But I've not been to bed for pretty much 36 hours now. Didn't get any sleep at all yesterday, at all last night. Was up all night, basically. And I had a kind of a zombie experience this afternoon. I couldn't put one foot in front of the other. Didn't know what I was doing. But anyway, I'm here. I didn't cry off with any excuse. I'm here. We are live. Michael Rivero joins me this hour. WhatReallyHappened.com from Oahu in Hawaii. We're on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Europe's most listened to independent news radio show. Proud to be. Thanks for supporting it. 2 hours of interesting talk, chat, analysis coming your way right now. The Factor. All that Bill O'Reilly bullshit. The Factor begins now. this is a no-spin zone and all that crap. Yeah, I've just been knackered. The future Mrs. Allen pulled a 16-hour shift at her place of work yesterday. She's in finance, she's an accountant, and she was doing her thing at the end of the month, and they always stay for hours and hours and hours at the end of the month. She came in the small hours of this morning. I was awake waiting up for her, and I effectively didn't go back to bed. So I rose out of bed on Wednesday about 6 a.m. and have not really slept since. I'm not looking for any sympathy. You know when that happens to you, you know how you feel. And I had a rough one today, trying to motivate myself. What are you going to talk about today, Richie? How are you going to mix it up? How are you going to educate, entertain and inform? So anyway, here we are. Lot to talk about with Michael Rivero. And I have some very interesting things to talk to you about in the second hour. Just me and you, just me and you, just me and you. It is Thursday, so what does that mean? It means tweet at Richie Allen Show. Let me know what you're thinking about any of the big stories in the news today. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. What a pro, what a pro. What a pro. When I get very tired, I get kind of merry. Do you ever get like that when you get really, really tired? You get almost drunk and then you don't feel so bad. Now, I've not had a drink, obviously. I wouldn't dare. I've never had a drink on any occasion that I've worked in any job I've done. But you get to that stage when you're knackered, when you kind of feel a bit giddy. I'm not quite there yet, but anyway. It's also a no-no in radio. I'd have been severely censured and chastised by my bosses of yore. If they would have said, don't ever go on the radio and tell people you're tired. God damn it, they don't want to hear that. They might be tired. They might have just come to the end of a very difficult day. The last thing they need is your gobshinery. And all that. And they'd be right, in fact. They would be right. On a serious matter, my friend and your friend, Gilad Atzmon, writer, and terrific philosopher, speaker, and a great jazz saxophonist. He was attacked the other day, pretty much the day after he was on this programme. In fact, it was the day he was on this programme. He published a video and he published photographs on gilad.co.uk, and Gilad said, on May 30th, I was attacked from behind by three Antifa activists, that's anti-fascist activists, on my way to a literature event in Edinburgh. I was with political commentator David Scott. The police were informed, and as you can see, we possess photos of two of the attackers. Excuse me. I hate these scumbags, you know, these violent scum who can't turn up to an event and speak to you about your ideas and challenge your ideas and your philosophies, that they would run up behind you and start punching you in the back of the head. And they call themselves anti-fascist. Anti-fascist to my arse. Wannabe hard guys. Thugs, that's all they are. Right, bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. I did mention the other day, David has announced a tour of the UK for 2018. An evening experience. David speaking for 4 hours at evening events. Fascinating. Looks to be terrific. Go to davidicke.com for the details there. Now, where did that come from? All right, yeah. You know, either something, senility is setting in, or some sort of brain injury has occurred that I'm not aware of. But I'm forgetting to turn things off when I come into the studio of an evening. Forgetting to turn things off, you know? Forgetting that I'm live on the radio. Anyway, to more serious matters. There have been 29,000 deaths caused by terrorism this year in 2017. Worldwide terrorism is at an all-time high. And it's costing the global economy. Last year, it cost the global economy $14.3 trillion. With a $2.5 trillion impact in the US alone. You might suggest to the United States that it stop sponsoring terrorist groups, and then it wouldn't have to pay $2.5 trillion cleaning up their own mess. But anyway, where are these figures coming from? They're coming from the Global Peace Index, which is a report on conflict and security. And these figures would indicate that world peace has been deteriorating for the past 10 years, driven by terrorism in the Middle East and Northern Africa. The study says the decline interrupts long-term improvements the world had been making since the end of World War II. Isn't it wonderful? You don't have to be Lieutenant Columbo. You don't have to ask just one more question. All you have to do is look at the fact that it is over a 10-year period. What has happened in the last 10 years? Well, Iraq was plunged into chaos by the destruction of that country and the de-Ba'athification of the government. Afghanistan was razed to the ground, as was Libya. ISIS, armed, trained and funded, and given a lollipop and a kick on the arse and sent off to Syria, have destroyed large parts of that country. So you don't have to be Columbo to figure it all out. Everything was going fine till about 10 to 12 years ago, says the report. It wasn't quite fine, but we can see the correlation. Terrorism deaths, people dying from terrorism, has risen more than 900% since 2007 in the 35 countries that are members of the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Of those members, 23 nations experienced terrorism-related deaths over the past year. Those countries include Denmark, Sweden, France and Turkey. Now, John Gearson is a professor of national security studies at King's College. He spoke with Sky News about whether or not foreign policy does indeed promote terrorism. You will hear the presenter first, then John Gearson from King's College.
If you look at the countries where there's been the largest increases, I'm just looking at the report now, Turkey, France, the US, Belgium, we've seen the terror attacks in Manchester. There's been quite a divisive issue about foreign policy. If you look at the United Kingdom, the UK foreign policy, whether that has had an effect on breeding this form of terrorism that we've been seeing waged around the world, where you're talking about Islamic extremism, for example. But on the other side, you have people who will say, well, hang on a minute, 9/11 happened before the invasion of Afghanistan, happened before the invasion of Iraq. So what is the clear picture here?
Well, of course, the answer is there isn't a clear picture.
There is a clear picture. There's a very clear picture, but we'll let him continue.
Clear picture. Some of the countries of Europe who have had the biggest increases, albeit from a very low base, were Nordic countries whose foreign policies could not be in any way construed as being a causal relationship with terrorism.
No, northern countries in Europe, they couldn't be blamed for causing terrorism in the Middle East. However, they've taken in large numbers of unvetted migrants, haven't they? But they don't talk about that.
Belgium similarly has declined to engage in a number of the overseas interventions of the past 15 years.
Yes, but it has lots and lots of migrants.
But nevertheless, of course, foreign policies and politics in general is a context in which terrorism does occur, because terrorism generally is related to the political circumstances of the countries where it comes up from.
Terrorism is related to the political circumstances in the countries where it comes from. Well, you see, all was well in Syria up until 2009. Wonder what happened there. Libya, calm, order, peace. Gaddafi might have been a bit whiffy. Things were going all right there. What happened to the politics there? Iraq? Yemen? Yeah. He goes on. Have a listen to this.
I think, though, the big change is that as it's come under pressure, Islamic State has sought to carry out more attacks against the countries it perceives are contributing to undermining its position. And of course, Turkey is one of those countries, even though it's a Muslim majority country, but also a number of other states in Europe, either because of circumstance, that it's easy to move, and it was easier to have cells in Belgium rather than the foreign policy of the European Union, have led for attacks to occur.
Yeah, what a load of monumental bollocks. Free movement was the reason these jihadis got to Belgium. That was an EU policy, okay? Whether you're pro-EU or not, there's no arguing with that. It was a policy of, it was a result of the EU's open border policy. Now, we said the United States, the UK and France were attacked by ISIS because ISIS wants to attack those undermining its plans. So ISIS is after revenge against those who are standing in its way. But not Russia, strangely enough. Not yet, anyway. Russia has a World Cup coming up next year. Give it some time. Russia is the biggest thorn in the side of Islamic State. So why no attacks on Russia? Where's the critical thinking of the UK and US media? I wonder, could it be that the Russian establishment wouldn't gain from an Islamic State attack in the motherland? I wonder, is that the reason? So why Islamic State attacks against the UK, France and the US, for example? Maybe it's because jihadis are allowed into the country with the aid of the intelligence services. See, it doesn't make sense that ISIS are attacking the UK, France and the United States because those countries are standing in its way. Yet Russia is the biggest stumbling block to ISIS. No attacks there. Just a little bit of critical thinking goes a long way, right? Now, the leaders of the main political parties in the United Kingdom met on the BBC last night for a debate, all except Theresa May, the Prime Minister. She sent Home Secretary Amber Rudd in her place. On terrorism, there was a very interesting exchange on foreign policy between Caroline Lucas of the Green Party and Rudd herself. And it was all about selling arms to those, well, evil, let's call them what they are, Saudis. Here's the exchange.
We can't solve all the world's problems, but we can at least stop adding to them. And my question is this, really, that why is Britain the second biggest arms dealer in the world? Why are we selling to 22 of the 30 countries on the government's own human rights watch list? Why did we make 10 times more in arms sales to Saudi Arabia than we gave to Yemen in aid?
Amber Rudd,
I genuinely don't know how you see. It's very nice. No,
I will make no apology for being a government that wants to defend this country. We will make sure that our defence budget is well funded. We will do that by having a strong economy.
You will sell an arms to Saudi Arabia.
We have to make sure that we can do that by having a strong industry.
Wait, arms sales to Saudi Arabia cannot be justified on the grounds of this being good for industry.
No,
this is absolutely leading to many, many deaths.
Saudi has the right. Saudi.
You see, you live in a madhouse. The world is inverted, and it is genuinely mad. When the Home Secretary can tell her colleagues, her peers and the national television audience, it's good business. We sell arms to the Saudis because it's good for industry. We don't care what they do with those bombs, right? We don't care. And I was thinking today, looking at Amber Rudd, who is a mother, I believe, talking about it's good for industry. I was thinking about baby talk. Baby talk. You know, baby talk. Baby talk. A lot of people say it's not good for babies. It's not good when you lean over to gaze lovingly on a beautiful baby and use baby talk. People say, don't do that. But I was thinking of baby talk, you know. Oh, look at you. Aren't you gorgeous? Aren't you lovely? Look at you. Oh, you're gorgeous. All that sort of stuff. What sort of baby talk do you think they have in Yemen, for example? And I was thinking about this, and it's not funny, this. This is not, you know, for a cheap laugh. I wonder how they talk in Yemen. Is it kind of, oh, coochie, coochie, coo. Aren't you lovely there with the big dent in your forehead? Aren't you? Aren't you lovely? Aren't you lovely there missing a leg? You're gorgeous there. You're gorgeous. It's good for business. It's good for industry. So as long as it is, we'll keep making and selling weapons to the most barbaric, evil, misogynistic abuser of human rights on planet Earth, Saudi Arabia. Wonderful. Moving on, Nigel Farage is a person of interest, according to The Guardian. He's a person of interest in the FBI probe into Russian meddling in US elections. The Guardian ran with this today. So Farage went on to Sky News and spoke to Kay Burley. Kay Burley's a proper genius, by the way, a proper genius. She tries to come over all Paxman with Farage.
What's going on with you and the Russians?
Nothing. I mean, do you know,
We've heard this term fake news over the course of the last year or so. This is fake news. This is an attempt by a liberal media who simply can't reconcile themselves with Brexit and with Trump, desperately trying to find a reason why these terrible things happened. So, I know Donald Trump, tick. I've met Julian Assange, tick. Therefore, somehow, I must be at the epicentre of some sort of spider's web of Russian conspiracy. And I want to say this. I've never been to Russia. I've never done any business in Russia. I've never had a Russian bank account. I have no Russian political connections whatsoever. This is simply hysterical nonsense.
OK, so liberal media, what about the liberal FBI? Because it's the FBI, isn't it, who said that you're a person of interest?
No, a journalist rings up the FBI who neither confirm or deny that I'm a person of interest. So the whole thing is rubbish.
OK, so you're not in any way anxious that the FBI are going to give you a tug and say, come and talk to us about your connections, not necessarily with Russia, but with people who are part or have been part of the Trump regime who may or may not have connections with Russia.
Well, if you say, did I meet somebody in a bar once who'd been to Russia, the answer might be yes. No, look, this is ridiculous. Absolutely, completely ridiculous. I have and never have had any business or political connections with Russia whatsoever.
Simple as that, says Farage. The Guardian story is nonsense. Nothing to see here. Move on. I believe him, by the way. There isn't anything to see here. We'll get into some of this with Michael Rivero in a few minutes. It's 21 minutes past the hour. And I will be chatting about this climate change nonsense in the second hour as well, all about this Paris deal and Trump. Now, it's been reported in the US that the number of people homeless in Los Angeles has soared in the past year. It soared by 23%, in fact, despite efforts to combat the problem. That's a lie, by the way. There have been no efforts to combat the problem whatsoever. In big cities like Los Angeles, as in Manchester, there are wonderful human beings who do their best for people worse off than themselves. But they get no help from the state whatsoever. So don't believe that there's a serious effort to combat the problem. 23% it's grown at. Supervisor Janice Hahn, LA supervisor, county supervisor Janice Hahn, said the figures are staggering. Work is being done to get thousands of people off the street and into housing, but at the same time, more and more people are becoming homeless. There's a huge imbalance there. So they get 20 people rehomed. As they're doing that, another 500 are being made homeless, something like that. The Hunger Games Society. Read The Perception Deception by David. And in a related story, and it is a related story, the family of former US President Barack Obama has purchased the home they were renting in DC. They were renting a 9-bedroom, 8.5-bathroom stone mansion in the upmarket Kalorama neighbourhood. They bought it for £6.2 million, which is just over $8 million. They are going to remain in DC until their youngest daughter, Sasha, finishes high school. How did the Obamas accrue a fortune large enough to buy a house for $8.1 million? Have a think about that. Pause for a minute and think about it. Every single member of Parliament, I think, barring only a dozen, maybe a little bit less, are millionaires here in the UK. Every single Secretary of State working for the Conservative government is a multi-millionaire. Look it up if you don't believe me. The article, by the way, on the BBC said the Obamas have been travelling the world in previously unseen luxury since they left the White House in January. Again, who's paying for that? It's all lovely, isn't it? It's lovely. It's a lovely world we live in. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Michael Rivero joins us. Keep tweeting me at Richie Allen Show as I see your tweets coming in. As when they are cogent and when they are legible, we will read them out. So express your opinion on anything at all, and I will read it out. This is one of those days, isn't it? It just is, isn't it? I have several computers and playout systems. No, it is going to do it for me. It is going to play the ad break. Good stuff. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
I wonder what judging a Bonnie Baby competition in Yemen is like. It must be absolutely hilarious, you know. Can you imagine it? I'm dwelling on this because it's serious stuff, you know. Imagine Bonnie Baby competitions, like the little boy with the half a face over there with the nose missing. He's got a lovely smile on him, God bless him, and that girl over there who's deaf and one of her eyes is missing, and she's lovely as well, but she didn't smile when I was looking at her. Madness. We live in a crazy world, you know. Industry is the reason why children in Yemen are being blown to pieces. Industry. So we can make weapons to give to the Saudis so that they can destroy the lives of millions of people. Welcome to Planet Dystopia, 26 minutes past the hour on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Stand by because Michael Rivero joins me after this from Al Jarreau. Moonlighting.
Someone by night. Someone by day. Nothing could change you. Set and sure of the way. Charm.
Jarreau, moonlighting on the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. The time is 29 minutes past the hour on a very, very warm Thursday evening here in South Manchester, the great city of Manchester. Thank you for all your tweets. Without further ado, let's welcome back our regular guest, our great friend, the terrific journalist and broadcaster Michael Rivero. Go to whatreallyhappened.com. Bookmark Mike's website. Find links to his radio show there. Top man. We love him. Michael, welcome back. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for having me back on your show again.
Do you know, I've not mentioned this to you before, but many years ago when we first spoke, I was making radio programs in Spain for Talk Radio Europe. And at the time, we had a very big FM audience, Mike, right across the Costa del Sol and the Costa Blanca. But we wouldn't have had very many people listening online. It was an FM station. And the first time I booked you, you were very kind to put on your website that you were going to be speaking on radio in Spain, and you put a link to it. And subsequently, we crashed in massive style when your many thousands of followers decided to log on to our website and completely caved us in. We had no idea what was going on. We still went out on FM, of course. And then afterwards, I realised, oh yeah, that Rivero guy is quite popular. And he did mention that he was coming on. Never mentioned that to you before. It just occurred to me today. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you very much.
Loads going on, Mike. I'm on your site as I speak, whatreallyhappened.com is Michael's website, bookmark it. This Russian Trump Jared Kushner thing is becoming ludicrous to the point that it's gone beyond laughable, Michael. The Guardian newspaper saying today that Nigel Farage might even be a person of interest. What's going on, Mike?
Well, it seems rather odd here that we have Hillary Clinton, I mean, all these months after the election, and she's out there just still trying to push this idea that Russia stole the election from her, Trump stole the election. She's just got this list of 20 or 30 reasons why she lost the election. This is the 1st of June. We're into summer, and she still will not let this go. And I don't know whether it's just she's unable to admit her own failings and shortcomings, if she's unable to admit that the American people just didn't like her at that last election. But it really has reached a point where people are saying this has gone on way too long. And we don't know if there's some kind of an ulterior motive or purpose, or it is simply a crazy old lady who can't let go of how close she came to the White House. But at this point, she's blaming everybody in the world except herself and her own shortcomings. And even the American corporate media is starting to make fun of her. At this point, she has clearly jumped the shark. Now she's trying to claim that Russia was hacking the DNC servers, but it was being done under the direction of certain evil Americans, possibly even Donald Trump himself. And it's just all of these allegations. There's no proof for any of it. And of course, a big part of it is they're trying to shout down the growing awareness that Russia did not hack the DNC email server. It was an internal leak by one of their own workers, Seth Rich, who had discovered during the primary season that a Hillary voter app he himself had written was being used to cheat Bernie Sanders out of the nomination. And he decided he needed to do something about it. And that's when he started getting these emails off the server and walking them out and getting them to WikiLeaks. And obviously, if the American people come to understand that Seth Rich was the leak, then this whole narrative of Russia hacking, Russia hacking, Russia hacking falls apart. And Hillary's campaign, the Democrats, the corporate media are going to be hugely embarrassed by this because they have literally bet their credibility over the last several months pushing this idea. And public trust in the corporate media and government as a whole is at an all-time record low. And so they really are very fragile right now. And you can almost smell that there's a high degree of panic out there, that they're just trying to shout down everybody who's saying, no, there was no Russian hacking. This was an internal leak by Seth Rich, who just reached his point where he said, I cannot morally be a part of this any longer. I have to do something about it.
Now, you know that I'm no fan of any politician, and I don't distinguish between them. Well, I do. I think the worst human being that's ever held any high office is Hillary Clinton. We're talking murder, extortion, perversion of justice, and everything else that we could throw at her. She must be pretty sure of herself, Michael, considering the information that is in the public domain about the crimes, the high crimes of her and her family. Again, I'm not exaggerating. George Webb was on this program last night, and I've looked into this for months, as you have. We're talking kidnapping, child trafficking, we're talking murder. And this is over years, not over months or over the election cycle. She must be... Two questions, Mike. She must be absolutely sure of the fact that nobody's ever going to come after her, number one. And why are senior Democrats not running for the trees to get as far away from Hillary Clinton as they can.
Well, all of this goes back to Arkansas in the 1980s under then Governor Bill Clinton. Arkansas was the hub for a covert CIA operation that was smuggling, manufacturing and smuggling untraceable military weapons down to Nicaragua to arm the Contras against the Sandinistas. It was one of these covert regime changes which the people are now coming to understand the U.S. government has been doing since the end of World War II, if not even before that. And because this operation was illegal under the Bolin Amendment and the Logan Act, the CIA couldn't go to Congress to get money for this. So they funded the operation by smuggling literally tons and tons of cocaine back into the United States of America on that same smuggling route, selling it. And Bill Clinton provided operational security in Arkansas. He kept the state drug investigators away from the CIA's various airports and other centers. And he also set up the money laundry, which was this loose network of land flip deals like Whitewater, Flowerwood, yeah, Castle Grande, banks like Madison Guarantee. And after the money was laundered, it was paid out through an Arkansas state agency, the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, which was writing all these checks to the people who were manufacturing these weapons and helping with the smuggling effort. Ostensibly, these were all business loans, but of course, they were never repaid, and that was the money machine that ran it. Now, everybody involved in this got very, very rich, but it represents a scandal that would be sufficient to discredit the entire U.S. government. When you hear all about this war on drugs and you see how illegal drugs like cocaine and heroin are destroying our culture, and then you find out that the U.S. government is itself the biggest drug smuggler of all, that is a huge scandal.
Michael, sorry to interrupt you, Mike. You're basically saying that this is above the pay grade of Trump or anybody like him, right?
This is basically the CIA having gone rogue, and they have been funding off-the-book clandestine operations with illegal drugs going back at least to Vietnam when they were smuggling heroin into the United States of America inside the body bags of our dead Vietnamese soldiers, our dead soldiers from the Vietnam War. There are two kinds of secrets in American politics. There are the little secrets that are the fodder for newspapers and political campaigns like Anthony Weiner's sexting scandal. Those can be used to fight against your opponents in the political arena, but they don't threaten the whole government. Then there are the great secrets, the ones that are so bad they would basically delegitimize the government instantly. The truth behind the JFK assassination, the truth behind 9/11, the truth behind all this government-sanctioned drug running.
Pedophilia.
I'm sorry?
Pedophilia, child abuse.
I'm not sure that that rises to the same level. But right now, the reason Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are so sure that they are untouchable is because they've got the goods on everybody. If they ever get brought up on charges, they'll simply release all this information about what the U.S. government has been doing in places like Nicaragua. And ultimately, of course, I think the reason why Hillary feels that nothing will ever be done about the email scandal, the reason that Comey literally, after reading off the list of felony Title 18 violations she committed, said we're not recommending charges because she didn't mean to do wrong, is because I think Hillary Clinton last year was replaying a scandal from 1994 called Chinagate. Now, back in 1994, Bill Clinton was running for re-election, and using his authority as President of the United States of America, he authorized the sale to China of highly sensitive technology with military applications over the objections of the Pentagon, the various intelligence agencies. And then it turned out that Chinese money was being poured onto various Chinese American citizens who then in turn were making these huge donations to Bill Clinton's reelection campaign. The scandal was called Chinagate. There was an investigation, but it went nowhere, as seems to be usual when you're dealing with the Clintons. And I think last year, the reason that there's so much effort to try and keep a lid on the email server scandal is I think Hillary was replaying it. She was using that email server, the private email server with weaker security than Ashley Madison, to deliver the goods and then her so-called charitable foundation to collect and launder the payments. And a large percentage of the money going into that Clinton Foundation was coming from foreign governments.
That's right.
Now, the hacker Guccifer, when he was prowling around Hillary's private email server, he reported seeing at least 10 foreign IPs prowling through the files that were being kept on that server. And this is a question that deserves to be asked, needs to be asked, deserves to be answered. But again, that is a great secret. If it comes out that a serving Secretary of State was betraying her country, selling U.S. secrets to foreign interests, that's a scandal that could discredit and delegitimize the entire government.
You and I, we have so much in common, you know, in terms of the way we think and the stories we cover. We've also been able to respectfully disagree. And we've always disagreed on the level of paedophilia. Because I think, Michael, it's what keeps these people in line. And it's why Clinton doesn't have to worry about getting a bullet in the back of her head some morning when she's out jogging. And then for it to be blamed on, you know, a lunatic or a thief or whatever. Because I think the levels of child abuse and paedophilia are endemic at all levels of politics. I really do. I mean, years ago, David wrote extensively about George H.W. Bush. He was up to his neck in, you know, in terms of Lawrence E. King and the credit union scandal. I think
Franklin,
it is massive.
The Franklin scandal.
Yeah. And listen, I don't want to go down that road because we've gone down that road so many times before. But I mean, organ trafficking in Eastern Europe, Michael, we're talking about levels of evil with this family that are beyond the pale. I think you're absolutely right. I think it won't and can't come out because it would collapse the state. It's the same here, I think. I think if English men and women, UK men and women, ever understand the levels to which children have been tortured, murdered even by the security forces looking after Edward Heath, I think it would collapse the state. I really do. You don't hold out any hope, Michael, do you, that she'll ever be brought to justice, Hillary Clinton, or anybody around her?
Well, obviously, I would like to see it happen. I mean, the Clintons basically destroyed my intended life and career path 24 years ago, and I would like to see a little bit of payback. But in the world of real politics,
remind our listeners of that, because we shouldn't assume knowledge. Go ahead there.
All right. Well, basically, 24 years ago, I was working in the film industry, visual effects. And I was a rising star. I'd won a bunch of awards, and I had a brand new blushing bride, Claire. And then all of a sudden, quite by accident, I stumbled over evidence that White House Deputy Counsel Vincent Foster had not, in fact, committed suicide, but he had been murdered, and the suicide scene was staged, because that was my business back then, looking at photos and videos and seeing what makes them look real or what is wrong with them where they don't look real. And so I shared this with some people. And at that time, I was working on a project for a company that shared the same building as CNN's Hollywood division. And I remember very clearly when we were out at this outdoor cafe for lunch, the people at the CNN people were just listening to me just intently. And that very night, we started getting death threats. I was fired in the middle of this project I was working on the very next day. I was just trying to do what any law-abiding citizen would do, see something, say something. And before I realized it, my entire career in Hollywood was gone, and I didn't realize just who I was up against until it was way too late, and that's how I got onto this path of being a truth activist and running the website and eventually talk radio. But I'm one of the many victims of the Clinton crime cartel. But again, going on back to the situation, the idea of a great secret, U.S. government involved in drug running, the truth behind Kennedy, the truth behind 9/11, and the rest of it. Those secrets could bring down the entire government. And so even Hillary Clinton's worst enemies are working hard to protect her out of concern of protecting their own positions within the government, their own wealth and privilege and power. And probably they're deluding themselves saying, well, anything that we do that's wrong, it's great because we have to save the nation. We have to save the nation without addressing the issue of whether the government is really something that deserves to be saved.
Brilliant stuff, Mike. Couple of things I want to talk about. Mike is going to be with us just about to the top of the hour. Check out his excellent radio show at whatreallyhappened.com. Top journalism, only making claims that he can provide evidence for us, the way Michael has operated all his career. Thanks for sharing that with us again. Some of our listeners mightn't have known that, Michael. It's important that they heard that. A couple of things that I want to get into. How did Barack Obama accrue the sort of money that enabled him to spend just over $8 million on a house in Washington, D.C., and spend most of the last few months swanning around the world, presumably first class, with his family. How did he earn that sort of money, Michael?
Oh, well, he earns it through, book deals and speaking fees, which are sort of an acceptable form of bribery for politicians. When you want a favor from a politician, you can't just hand them a check because that would be illegal. But you say, I need this from you, and then somewhere down the road, we'll have a book deal for you. And very often these book deals turn out to be very bad business investments, but nobody really looks at them. When Hillary Clinton came out with her book, It Takes a Village, and she got a Grammy for the audiobook version of it, and it was this big deal, but it really did not sell very well. In fact, it wound up basically in the manager's closeout bin at the bookstores. But this is a way of payback to a politician that is quasi-legal, and that's where a lot of this money comes on in. If you look at the advances on the book deals that both Barack and Michelle Obama have gotten, you realize that's one of the ways they get all this money. But it is amazing to see all of these politicians who become incredibly wealthy on what is essentially a civil service salary. A lot of people have called attention to just how these very corrupt politicians, how they accrue tremendous wealth and net worth. And it is a big problem.
They get the rewards, Mike, don't they? We see George Osborne, the former chancellor here. He's obviously been made the editor of the Evening Standard newspaper, which is absolutely untenable in a free democracy, that the former chancellor of the Exchequer can be given the editorial reins of an important newspaper in London. But he's done the £100,000 a time speaking circuit. Blair has, Cameron has. I don't know about W, but maybe he did. These are rewards for when they're in power, seeing no evil, hearing no evil, and speaking no evil, basically.
Yes.
Simple
as
that.
That's absolutely right.
I want to ask you about this. John Gearson. I didn't know anything about John Gearson until today, Mike. He's not in the news. I'm not going to Shanghai you now with something from the news. But Gearson is a professor of national security at King's College in London. He said a bizarre thing today on Sky News. He said, the reason ISIS jihadis are attacking the UK and France and the United States of late, it's because those countries are undermining its plans, that the US, France and the UK are standing in the way of ISIS world domination. Now, Michael, I'm not the brightest man that ever lived. I'm reasonably bright. But Russia is the biggest stumbling block for the plans of the lunatic Salafi jihadists. Why is ISIS not attacking Russia, Michael?
Well, ISIS is basically being used as a clandestine proxy for U.S. foreign policy. One of the things that came out about Hillary's term as Secretary of State was that the United States was secretly arming ISIS and al-Qaeda in Syria.
Absolutely.
As a proxy against Assad. And now it looks like the U.S. is using ISIS as a proxy against Philippine President Duterte. So ISIS is carrying out these jihadi terror attacks in an attempt to build up public support for more wars into the Middle East. And that's all that ISIS has ever really been about, is trying to scare everybody into saying, yes, we have to go get those gosh darn evil Muslims.
And I made the point in my monologue that even if ISIS had designs on bombing places in Russia, I made a rather cheeky point. Some people would say it was a crass point, but the Russian intelligence agencies wouldn't turn the other way, Michael. And I'm making that point because despite the many things said about the Manchester Arena attack, and you know I'm in Manchester, you probably don't know that I frequent the arena. I've been there a dozen times in the last 2 years. I know the venue very well. To my best guess, based on the evidence that we've seen, is that a bomb did go off in the arena. Some device of some description went off and people were killed. I do know that people were killed. For my money, Michael, it points to the intelligence agencies of this country turning a blind eye to who comes into the country, where they've been. In this case, Salman Rabedi, his dad was working for MI6 to usurp Gaddafi many years ago. They're turning their backs on known jihadists, Michael, to benefit from the terrorist attacks. What do you think?
Yeah, you're absolutely right here. I mean, the FBI issued a warning that this guy was going to carry out a bombing. This guy's own friends were calling the anti-terror hotline saying there's a problem. There's no indications that any surveillance was placed on this individual. This is a classic case of a false flag terror attack to try and scare the general population into support of the government's war agenda. And unfortunately, as more and more people are getting tired of constant states of war, we're probably going to see more of these false flag attacks as a desperate attempt to try and get the people back into this idea of hating who the government tells us to hate.
And it makes us terrified, Michael, doesn't it? There's a series of massive events taking place across Manchester this weekend. Robbie Williams is in town at the City of Manchester Stadium for a couple of nights. There's a benefit concert for the victims of the terror attack, which again is a bit crass. It's very soon. I don't think anybody's given any thought to the emotions of the families who might want to grieve and be left alone for a bit. But all of these things are happening. One of the things they want us to do, Michael, is stop congregating. They want to instill the fear of God in us, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. They want to keep us isolated and separate and emotionally and informationally dependent on the government and the official sources. And, of course, anytime any event like this happens, every politician is going to be using it to push their particular agenda. Now they're talking about a total ban on all encryption in Great Britain, even though there's no indication that encryption was used on this. They're talking about limits on messenger applications, even though there was no indication that a messenger application was used on this. The guy appeared to be basically just out there following a script. And no communication. But again, every time you have one of these events, every politician uses it to try and push their own particular agenda at the moment. And I think it is that overlap of often disparate blaming, which is why the propaganda doesn't really work, because it's very often self-contradictory. And a lot of people will say that really is nonsense to try and equate personal encryption with stopping terror, because it certainly is not going to do that. Most real criminals and real terrorists already know not to use cell phones or social media or personal electronic devices because they're being surveilled. So it really is just a giant bluff to try and get the people to go along with further surrendering of their right to privacy in the face of a government which is clearly becoming quite afraid of a more aware general population. In fact, apparently one of the major topics at the Bilderberg conference, which started just today, is called literally the War on Information. And what they're talking about is a way to try and justify imposition of censorship on all non-official means of communication, meaning independent media, blogs, and websites. Certainly here in the United States of America, it's going to go up against that First Amendment, but they're already trying to find ways to bypass the First Amendment, saying, well, the First Amendment doesn't protect hate speech. Well, what's hate speech? Well, hate speech is what we say it is moment to moment to moment.
That's right.
So there literally is a war going on right now between the corporate media, propagandists, and the independent media, who are trying to keep the public fully informed as to what's really going on. They're going after our servers. My server had a massive, massive denial of service attack this morning. It took us a long time to beat them off. They're literally threatening our advertisers to try and pull their business from our websites. Just anything that they can do
to try and shut
us all down.
Sorry to interrupt you. Your advertisers have told you that they've been coming under pressure not to work with you.
Yes, some of them have canceled, saying we're being told that people can hurt our business if we're seeing advertising on your website.
You see, over here, the Official Communications Act governs broadcasters. We abbreviate it and we call it Ofcom, O-F-C-O-M. We've heard that starting sometime next year, independent operators like myself and others will be approached by Ofcom, and Ofcom will say, you can no longer broadcast from your own private studio, your house, your bedroom, whatever. You're going to have a license from us. Now, the cost of the license isn't very significant. But what people don't understand is, once you're governed by them, they can then then come after you and say that members of the public have been writing to them to complain about some of your content. And that's where it begins. And that's when you're in trouble. Before we go, Mike, is that something that you are concerned about in terms of the FCC in the United States coming after independent producer and presenters like yourself?
Well, we're already starting to see it because net neutrality has basically been ended, and that allows the ISPs to intentionally throttle access to non-official news sources. But there has been talk over the last couple of years about requiring webmasters to literally obtain a license of some kind from the government. In this case, though, the license fee is going to be very, very high, another attempt to basically make it impossible for us to continue. Once you're required to get a license, you're required to conform to what they think is the real news. We're in a very, very dark space where the rulers of various nations have come to understand that they've lost the ability to lie to their populations with impunity. And without that, they have really lost the main form of control they have over their population, which is to be able to lie to them, to cheat them, to defraud them, to play dirty tricks, to get the population to go in the direction the rulers want them to go. And I think the watershed moment goes all the way back to the claim about Saddam Hussein having nuclear weapons, which turned out to be a big, fat lie, and all the subsequent lies about Assad and his sarin gas. And so right now, at least here in the United States of America, trust and confidence in government and the corporate media is at an all-time record low. And they're struggling to find a way to get it on back. They're trying to basically plant nonsense on the independent media to discredit us, lure us into making some kind of a move that can be result in a legal action. It's called lawfare.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that corporate media and the government can't start telling the truth because they have lied for so long, they can't turn around and go back. The American people are not going to forgive the government and the corporate media for all the lies we've been told for as long as we have been alive. So they're kind of in a corner, and cornered animals are, of course, the most dangerous.
Michael, thanks for coming back on the show. It's always brilliant to have you on. Michael's website is whatreallyhappened.com. Links there to the What Really Happened radio show. Terrific program presented by Mike from Oahu Daily. Mike, thank you, mate. Always a pleasure. Look after yourself.
I certainly will. Thank you for having me on the show, and I look forward to the next time.
Can't wait, Mike. The great Michael Rivero on the line from Oahu, Hawaii. Check him out, whatreallyhappened.com. The time is 3 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and TuneIn Radio. I did mention this the other evening, and one or two of you, quite rightly, emailed me and said, Richie, you can't be making claims about Ofcom. I wasn't making claims. I've got a couple of very good friends who work in broadcasting. One who works for the BBC, whom I got to know some years ago in London. And they're very, very shrewd and very astute, very honest. And that person has worked, not now, but has worked in compliance. Because every broadcasting organisation in the UK that has a licence to broadcast must have a compliance officer. What is that? Well, it's just what it says, really. Somebody whom must know the Ofcom regulations as well as they know as well as they know their favourite book, as well as they know their favourite record. They've got to know these regulations, these Ofcom regulations. And a compliance person will take pre-recorded material and will take scripts for a live show and will monitor them to make sure they are in compliance with Ofcom. So that person would have a lot to do with Ofcom. They would know those who work at Ofcom quite well, and they would get, pick up bits of information. Now, the BBC probably has hundreds of people working in Ofcom compliance. My friend said to me some weeks ago that my friend heard that starting next year, Ofcom is going to go after programs like yours, Richie, I was told. And I said, well, they can't, because previously, well, now, as it stands now, Ofcom does have jurisdiction over online radio stations, so long as the online radio station has a linear schedule. Do you know what that means? It's pretty simple. It means they have programs that go out regularly at the same time and on the same days. That's a schedule. The Richie Allen Show, live at 7 o'clock. Another show, live at 9, straight after Richie, Mary comes on with the country and the country music show, whatever, you get the picture. That's the way it is. As it stands, programmes like this are not governed by and are not subject to the regulations of Ofcom. But I've been told by reliable people that starting from next year, Ofcom are going to say, you've got to have a licence with us. Now, the money is not really the issue, because it's a one-off payment of a couple of hundred pounds or something like that. One-off payment, a couple of hundred pounds. I would be sent a massive amount of material to pore over to understand the Ofcom regulations and how they might affect my output, my editorial. What is your editorial? Well, my editorial is basically my content, the subjects I talk about and attempt to break down on this programme. So there would be guidelines and regulations as to how you must do that. Things like harm, for example. You're not supposed to broadcast material that might cause harm, whether it be to a minor, whether it be to an ethnic minority, so on. So the minute you sign up to it, one of our listeners, or maybe not one of our listeners, just somebody who doesn't like the independent media, somebody who doesn't like me, somebody who doesn't like David Icke, they can write to Ofcom and complain about a particular programme and about something that was said on that programme. And then you could be in a world of shit. Because Ofcom can then come back, they can review the programme, they will ask me for my take on it, they will ask me to submit a written response to the allegation made, but ultimately Ofcom can uphold the complaint and they can say, you're fined £1,000, Mr. Allen. £2,000. £5,000. They could say, Mr. Allen, you've been in repeated breach of Ofcom regulations, therefore we are withdrawing your licence to broadcast. What does that mean? It means that should you broadcast after that time when the licence is withdrawn, Ofcom can send people around to your property to confiscate your equipment. You see, this is where it's going. And this isn't that InfoWars fear porn garbage. This is the truth. This is what's coming down the line for the independent media. We have to box clever with it. We really have to box clever with it. So Mike is right there. And similar things are happening in the United States. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'm going to read some of your tweets, and I'm then going to take some music, and when I come back from that, I'm going to talk a little bit about climate change. Don't worry, I'm not going to bore you. It will be interesting. Climate change after this.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And before I go any further, I want to say a massive happy birthday to the outstanding Emma Abitson, whose birthday it is today. Emma won't be listening to this because I think the great Pete Middleton, her partner in love and in crime, well, not in crime, of course, her partner in love and in business at Pete Middleton Pictures. Emma's birthday is today. Happy birthday, Emma. Check out Emma's films, Traffic and Traffic 2, groundbreaking films about forced adoption. Wonderful woman, and has been a great guest on this programme. And she's been a great help to people going through that awful, awful nightmare of dealing with social services and secret family court. So happy birthday, Emma. Keep the tweets coming into at Richie Allen Show. Les Hewitt says, Richie, that is what happened to Richard D. Hall's television show. I don't know anything about that, Les, but thank you for that. Luga tweets, no fear, Richie, no compromise. We'll never be scared of it, Luga. But it can be fatal for the programme, ultimately, you know. Karen tweets, I agree, it's not the money, Richie, it's the control they'd want to shut down. Yes, that is right. That's what it's about. Once they've gotten you signed up to their oversight, right, they can come after you. It only takes a complaint and they can basically wipe you out. Desmond tweets, it's going to be passion. It's going to be great for people to be a hacker in the next couple of years to bypass government online censorship, government internet censorship. You might be right, Desmond. I don't know an awful lot about technical things. I'm very poor, in fact. I barely get this programme on air every night. And I do mean that. I'm not being falsely modest. I'm absolutely crap when things go wrong. Paul Ripley gets phoned up and I cry down the line to him. Please, Paul. And then Paul comes out. Millie tweets, do you really need a licence for something that is actually lawful? Yes, the Official Communications Act deems it so. If you broadcast a linear schedule, if you are a radio station online, you must have a licence. You must be licensed. Simple as that. Keep those tweets coming in. Hi to Faisal. Hi to, let me scroll down there. Hi to Charlie O'Malley, who made a lovely comment earlier on. Richie, you've got a fantastic advert from Data Clinic. Just wondering why Trump didn't use Data Clinic on Hillary's computer server. Sorted, says Charlie O'Malley. It's a great comment, that. Yes, the great Chris Seeley at Data Clinic, he could have sorted out all of that server nonsense there. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Hi to Spirit Samba, to Hubertus, to Jay, and to everybody else who's tweeting. You can tweet at Twitter, at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, and you can see what other people are tweeting and engage with them. Hi to Truth Bombs as well, to Phil Turner and to Stephen Lash, who's in Manchester. Good friend of the programmes as well, and a supporter of the show is Steve. Thank you, Steve. As is Jen Crosby. Jen, thank you for your ongoing support of the programme. It touches me. It really does. It humbles me that you think it worth supporting. Thank you for doing that, Jen. I really appreciate that. Right. I'm going to talk about climate change. Don't worry, it will be interesting. We'll be the judge of that, Richie Ladd, says Scott. Of course, you will be, Scott. It's subjective. Radio programmes are subjective. You like them or you don't. I'm well aware of it. 7 minutes past the hour. Let's have some music from the Black Crowes. I love this song. It's called She Talks to Angels. When we come back from that, I'm going to talk a little bit about climate change. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the independent media. And some of you are not going to like that, but I like it. It's good to challenge you. Challenge your perceptions. 8 minutes past the hour. So this is the Black Crowes then, on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Never mentions the word addiction in certain companies. Yes, she'll tell you she's an orphan after you meet her family. Thank you. wears a cross around her neck. Yes, the hair is from a little boy, and the cross is someone she has not met. But not yet. There she talks to angel. Says they all know her name. Oh, and she talks to angel. There's a color out by her name. She don't know no lover.
Robinson and the Black Crows, and She Talks to Angels, 12 minutes past the hour on your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting across the world on davidicke.com, TuneIn Radio and Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, Europe's most listened to independent talk radio programme. No doubt about that. You've made it so. Thanks for tuning in this Thursday, June 1st, 2017. Beautiful weather, very warm in the studio. Can't have a fan. Fans make noise. Richie. Not that sort of fan. Can't have an electronic fan. They make noise as well. Some of you have been tweeting, and I saw this when Michael was on the programme. Multiple news agencies reporting a shooting inside a resort in the capital of the Philippines. They're saying that 25 people have been injured. There are fears that British people are among those hurt. Around midnight local time at Resorts World Manila in Pasay City, people saw guests jumping from the second floor of the hotel, a shooting of some description. I can't tell you much more about it than that because I'm live, and you know what the news agencies do at times like this? They repeat the same things over and over again. I suppose it'll be some time before we know what's really happened. That's in the Philippines, and it has been happening in the last hour or thereabouts, coming up for 14 minutes past the hour. Thank you for your tweets. Keep them coming in this Thursday. Thank you for listening to the programme. I mean it. I say that and I mean it. Now, on Donald Trump and on climate change, it's been announced in the last few minutes that very, very, very soon, Donald Trump will announce that the United States is in fact withdrawing from the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. Now, this is being reported by US media outlets. Trump made this a big campaign promise during the election campaign last year. He said he would take that step, that he would withdraw the US from the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. He said that he would do it to help the United States coal and oil industries. Now, his opponents in America are saying this is an abdication of American leadership on a pressing international challenge. So Trump is apparently going to announce very soon that the United States will pull out of the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. What's going on there? I don't know. I could speculate, but I won't. I'll watch it closely over the next day or two, and Like you, I will form an opinion. Mine will be no more valid than yours. So, what's going on with this particular... We've not talked about this for a while. Piers Corbyn, the brother of Jeremy Corbyn and meteorologist, has been on this programme in the past talking about this subject, climate change, and why the idea that man, through man's activities, is changing the climate. Now, you and I think, are of the same opinion. Man's activities are definitely affecting the ecosystem. Man's activities are causing extinction. Man's activities are poisoning the land, no doubt about that. And poisoning the seas, no doubt about that. But are they changing the climate? Irrevocably, irretrievably, no, I don't think so. And here's what I think is happening. I'm just going to mention a couple of absolute truths before we hear from a geologist who's spoken about this, a clip I've played but not for a long time on the programme. This is so important, I want to repeat some of this. There has been no rise in overall global temperatures since 1997. There hasn't been. That's full stop, there has not. Even though we are emerging from an ice age and the planet is gradually warming anyway. But since 97, no overall rise in median temperature around the world. Now, anybody who's familiar with The Perception Deception, a book David released in 2013, I think, around about that time, which at that time was basically the Perception Deception was the culmination of around 20 years of David's research. And in that book, he talks a lot about climate change and how that came out of the Club of Rome and how, kind of perverse as it is, it was going to be used as an enemy to unite the people of the world. But that at the same time, and this is where it gets perverse, I think, we the people are the enemy because we the people are the cause of it. So water shortages, famine, pollution, and as you well know, dear listener, these days armed conflicts can actually be blamed on climate change. People on this programme like Christopher Monckton, God love him, we had a ding-dong last time he was on, but he's right. It's a religion. It's become a religion. Dissent. Dissent against it, speaking out against it, claiming that it is scientifically unsound, has become intolerable, and there's been talk, very serious talk, about making the denying of climate change illegal. There are many men and women working for Friends of the Earth, lobby groups, the Greens, Greenpeace, but many powerful men and women in business who are proposing that we eventually outlaw the denying of man-made contribution to climate change, or man's contribution to climate change. It's incredibly ironic, isn't it? Globalisation is damaging our ecosystem, destroying the seas and the air quality. I could spend a lot of time here now talking about aerosol spraying and geoengineering, but I won't. And much of the destruction of our environment could be dealt with very simply. But to avoid doing that and to avoid any real discussion on that, all of this is lumped in with the irreversible climate change. So you get Sky News, for example, doing very, very, very high quality productions about plastic in the oceans, which is a deadly, deadly thing, and it's very serious for ocean life. Of course it is. But then they throw climate change into the mix and they blur the lines between us producing plastic and dumping it in the ocean and climate change. You see, this could be dealt with, really, but it isn't. So I've come to believe, not because I just read The Perception Deception on its own, but because of my own work, not work, I've not done any work, my own research, my own, I should have said my own homework into this, that the agenda here is to de-industrialise the world. That's the agenda. Which segues nicely into the Hunger Games Society agenda, defined by David. Culled the population through unemployment, hunger, starvation, rising energy bills, squeeze the life blood out of the population. How did they do that? Well, they crushed the population financially. End freedom of movement. End freedom of movement eventually. Make it impossible to get on a plane. Tax cars out of existence. Emissions taxes. This is all part of Agenda 21. That's where this climate change garbage is ultimately going. But you'll get no talk of that, of course, on British television, radio, and you certainly won't get it in the print media. So I want you to listen to 15 minutes of a clip that I've not played for well over a year. And it's the geologist and professor of earth sciences at the University of Melbourne, Ian Plimer, who is a world-renowned geologist and a long-time critic of the idea that man, through man's activities, is indeed destroying, not destroying, but changing the climate. That the earth is warming because of our own activities. He's been a critic of that since forever and a day. A few years ago, he gave an amazing keynote speech. I don't know if you'd call it a keynote speech. He addressed UK Parliament. What he had to say was absolutely outstanding. Have a listen to what he had to say and tweet your thoughts on it if you haven't heard it before.
I'm a geologist. And the one thing that we miss out on in looking at climate change is the past. Climates have always changed. Climate changes in the past have been greater and faster than anything we experience in our lifetime. And sea levels have always changed. Not by the modest couple of millimetres that people are having conniptions about, but we've had in the past sea level changes of only 1,500 metres. That's a sea level change. And if we look back in the history of time, the atmosphere once had a very large amount of carbon dioxide in it. It's now got less than 0.04%. Where did that carbon dioxide go to? It went into chalk, limestone, shells and life. And we've been sequestering carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere for only 2,000 to 500 million years. This planet has been degassing carbon dioxide since it first formed on that Thursday, 4,567 million years ago. Carbon dioxide is a natural gas. It has dominated the atmosphere for an extraordinarily long period of time, and we now are at a dangerously low level. If we halved the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we would have no terrestrial plants. Carbon dioxide is plant food. It is not a pollutant. To use words like pollution with carbon dioxide is misleading and deceptive. But the past gives us a wonderful story. In the past, we've had six major ice ages. We are currently in an ice age. It started 34 million years ago when South America had the good sense to pull away from Antarctica and there was a circumpolar current set up which isolated Antarctica, and we started to get the Antarctic ice sheet. We've had periods of glaciation and interglacials. We are currently in interglacial. And during that 34 million years, we have refrigerated the Earth. But for less than 20% of time, we have had ice on planet Earth. The rest of the time, it's been warmer and wetter. And there's been more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And what did life do? It thrived. Six of the six great ice ages were initiated when the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere was higher than now. In fact, up to 1,000 times higher. So we have from the geological evidence absolutely no evidence that carbon dioxide has driven climate. For some odd reason, the major driver of climate is that great ball of heat in the sky, which we call the sun. You heard it here first. It's really quite unusual. And we change our distance from the sun. Every 100,000 years, our orbit changes from elliptical to circular. And we have a cycle of 90,000 years of cold and 10,000 years of warm. We're in one of those warm cycles now. And every 43,000 years, the axis of the Earth changes a little bit. And every 21,000 years, we get a bit of a wobble. Each of those orbital events puts us further from the sun. Every now and then, we get bombarded by cosmic rays coming from a supernova eruption somewhere out there. And if the sun's magnetic field cannot drive these away, we start to form low-level clouds. We've got extremely good evidence that this process has been going on for a very long period of time. Every now and then, continents start to move, and they move at very rapid rates. They move about this much every year. And at one time, a continent can be over a pole. At another time, it can be at the equator. Those moving continents change the major heat balance on the Earth, and that's the ocean currents. The oceans carry far more heat than the atmosphere. Every now and then, because of major geological processes, we'll get a great bulge on the ocean floor of new volcanic rock. That changes ocean currents. Every year, we have 10,000 cubic kilometres of seawater that goes through new volcanic rocks in the ocean floor. That exchanges heat. The reaction between seawater and the rocks stops the oceans becoming acid. When we run out of rocks, the oceans will become acid, but don't wait up. It will be a long time. We see 1,500 terrestrial volcanoes on planet Earth. We only measure 20 of them, and very few of those measurements are really accurate. But they tell us that a little bit of carbon dioxide leaks out of those volcanoes. But what we don't hear is that there are at least 3.47 million volcanoes on the sea floor which leak out huge amounts of carbon dioxide. We have got pools of liquid carbon dioxide on the sea floor. So, early Earth's carbon dioxide, where did it go? It went into rocks. Where did it come from? It came from rocks. What did it do to the planet? We did not fry and die. We didn't have runaway greenhouse. Well, that's just geology. That's not important. So let's look in more modern times. In more modern times, we have drill cores that have gone through the ice sheets. Snow, when it falls, captures some air. That air is then trapped in the ice. We can later extract it from drill core and measure the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. And we can see with our cycles of glaciation and interglacials that when we finish an interglacial event, then we release carbon dioxide some 800 million years later. 800 years later. So what's that telling us? It's telling us that temperature is driving carbon dioxide, not that carbon dioxide is driving temperature. Oh yes, but that's only hundreds of thousands of years ago. Forget that. Well, let's go to more modern times. We've been measuring temperatures accurately since 1850, and the accuracy is plus or minus 1 degree Celsius for those ancient measurements. We are being told that this 0.7 degree Celsius rise is going to create a disaster. I've only got to move over to here, and I've had a 0.7 degree Celsius temperature rise. Where do you people go for your summer holidays? You go to a warmer climate. We are creatures from the Rift Valley. We like warm climates. If someone from Helsinki moves to Singapore, there's an average temperature rise of 22 degrees Celsius. Singaporeans don't drop dead in the streets from the temperature. So we are creatures of warm climates. And we've been measuring temperature, and we have seen a slight warming from 1860 to 1890, and then a slight cooling until 1910, then a warming until 1940, so much so that the Northwest Passage was open, then a cooling until 1977, and then a warming until the end of the century, and now we're in a period of cooling. So we've had these cycles of warming and cooling. Strange that these cycles are actually related to changes in the heat balance in the oceans. So we have these 60-year cycles over a long warming event. We are in a period of global warming. It has been warming since the Maunder Minimum, 330 years ago. These were the times when you had the ice fairs on the Thames. These are the times when the Dutch masters painted hoarfrosts and bitterly cold conditions. That was the time when the sun was a bit inactive and we had no sunspot activity. So we're in a long period of warming, and one of the questions that I ask in this book is which part of the last 330 years of warming is due to human activity, and which part is natural? These are questions that kids should ask their school teachers, and they're deliberately unanswerable questions. Because I am of the view that many children are getting fed environmental propaganda in the schools and are not being given the critical and analytical facilities to be able to dissect an argument. So we're in a period of warming. What's the worry? It's quite normal. And let's just look at history. The one thing that the climate industry, which it is, ignores is history. In Roman times, it was warm. It was considerably warmer than now. And we know that. They kept good records. They grew olives up the Rhine River as far as Bonn. They had wine grapes in Yorkshire. We know from their clothing that it was warm. Possibly they were going to an orgy, but I think it more likely it was warm. And that warming suddenly stopped in 535 AD. And we entered the Dark Ages. And in 535 AD, we had Krakatoa fill the atmosphere with aerosols. And it wasn't a big volcano. Only 30 cubic kilometres of aerosols go into the atmosphere. We've had bigger ones in Yellowstone. We've had even bigger ones in New Zealand, where 10,000 cubic kilometres of aerosols have gone into the atmosphere. And we pray for another one, because that's the only way we'll ever beat them at rugby. Just wipe them out. We had two volcanoes, one in Rabaul and one in Krakatoa in Indonesia in 535, 536. We went into the Dark Ages. It was cool. What happened? Crops failed. We starved. We had civil unrest. We had cannibalism. We broke out of that into the medieval warming. First to feel it was the Vikings. The seas became calmer. They could go further fishing. They actually went to Newfoundland, which they called Vinland. In Greenland, grapes and barley were growing. In Greenland, the graves were deep, because there was no permafrost. It was a wonderful, benign climate, 5 degrees warmer than now. Eric the Red was saying, come to Greenland, it's a wonderful climate, and it was. And then we went through a period of solar inactivity, and in 23 years, we went from the medieval warming into the Little Ice Age. And that Little Ice Age ended 330 years ago. So what do you think would happen after a Little Ice Age? Do you think it'd get colder, or do you think it'd get warmer? The only reason that the arguments of science have got any traction in society is that they have been related to the last 30 years or 40 years of temperature measurements. I see with great interest the Met Office is telling us that this is the hottest year on record, but you might be on a different calendar to me, but I don't think this year's finished yet. And this time last year, I was in London, as I was the time before, the year before, and it was miserable. It was cold. It was very cold. So those sort of predictions made just before a big climate conference, one has to be very sceptical of. So in science, scepticism is not a pejorative word. In science, there is no consensus. In science, there are constant battles. A good example, we all knew that we got ulcers from an acid stomach and from stress, so we took pills and rubbed our bellies and hoped the ulcers would go away until two scientists who were not following the mainstream, who were not following the consensus, were arguing that this was due to a bacterium, and no one listened. Ultimately, one of them took the bacterium, developed ulcers, took the antidote, and for that they get a Nobel Prize. You do not get a Nobel Prize for following the consensus or saying the science is settled. I believe we've had an enormous corruption of science and the scientific method. I believe that the monies that are floating around for climate research, which is a current fad and fashion, are quite perverse. I believe we're putting science backwards, and come the next inevitable pandemic, we may not have the weapons to handle it. We might go waving herbs and chanting rather than creating an antidote. So this, for me, this climate industry has been a huge attack on the scientific method. It has been an attack on my science and history, and things fortunately are changing. I finish with one last point. You've got your Climate Change Act. We've just had a carbon tax in Australia. 19 bills went through Parliament. And our carbon tax, is to lower the emissions of carbon dioxide from our employment-generating industries in Australia. And it's wonderful. We've led the world in suicide. And our carbon tax is to knock down our emissions by 5%. Now, you can do the sums. And the sums are very simple. The IPCC says that 3% of annual emissions are from humans. Why is it that that 3% drives climate change is beyond me and not the other 97%? But that's another matter. Australia puts out 1.5% of the world's CO2 emissions. You can do the calculations, and by Australia knocking back their emissions by 5%, we will, by the year 2050, have lowered global temperatures by 0.00007 degrees Celsius. So I do hope you enjoy our sacrifice in giving you a warmer climate here in England. Thank you.
Thank you.
Outstanding stuff by Ian Plimer there. The levels of corruption within the scientific community, scientists whoring themselves out for the climate change agenda, ignoring historical evidence. You know, the evidence he laid out there that predates the Industrial Revolution, the evidence of, you know, extreme climate shifts, extreme warming periods, as well as cooling periods. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take you to Donald Trump, I think, who might very well be speaking live about his decision to pull the US out of the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. In fact, we can hear a bit of what Trump is saying. Here he is.
Entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States, its businesses, its workers, its people, its taxpayers. So we're getting out. But we will start to negotiate, and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine. As president, I can put no other consideration before the well-being of American citizens. The Paris Climate Accord is simply the latest example of Washington entering into an agreement that disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries, leaving American workers, who I love, and taxpayers to absorb the cost in terms of lost jobs, lower wages, shuttered factories, and vastly diminished economic production. Thus, as of today, the United States will cease all implementation of the non-binding Paris Accord and the draconian financial and economic burdens the agreement imposes on our country. This includes ending the implementation of the nationally determined contribution and, very importantly, the Green Climate Fund, which is costing the United States a vast fortune. Compliance with the terms of the Paris Accord and the onerous energy restrictions that is placed on the United States could cost America as much as 2.7 million lost jobs by 2025, according to the National Economic Research Associates. This includes 440,000 fewer manufacturing jobs, not what we need. Believe me, this is not what we need, including automobile jobs and the further decimation of vital American industries on which countless communities rely. They rely for so much, and we would be giving them so little. According to the same study, by 2040, compliance with the commitments put into place by the previous administration would cut production for the following sectors. Paper, down 12%. Cement, down 23%. Iron and steel, down 38%. Coal, and I happen to love the coal miners, down 86%. percent.
He loves the coal miners. If you've just joined the Richie Allen Show, we're listening to Donald Trump live. I've got a live feed there. What I've done is I've paused it momentarily. The US will withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. He said they will renegotiate a deal that is fair. Now, that's very interesting. Think about that. Why would he renegotiate a deal if the United States were to, as he said, pursue an energy policy to the benefit of itself and itself only? He said that if it had continued along the, if it had continued within the framework of the Paris Climate Agreement, it would have devastated employment, it would have devastated manufacturing. He said 2.7 million jobs would have been lost within the next 5 to 10 years. He's been talking about coal mining. Let's have a listen to just a little bit more of it.
Natural gas down 31%. The cost to the economy at this time would be close to $3 trillion in lost GDP and 6.5 million industrial jobs, while households would have $7,000 less income, and in many cases, much worse than that. Not only does this deal subject our citizens to harsh economic restrictions, it fails to live up to our environmental ideals. As someone who cares deeply about the environment, which I do, I cannot in good conscience support a deal that punishes the United States, which is what it does. The world's leader in environmental protection, while imposing no meaningful obligations on the world's leading polluters. For example, under the agreement, China will be able to increase these emissions by a staggering number of years, 13. They can do whatever they want for 13 years, not us. India makes its participation contingent on receiving billions and billions and billions of dollars in foreign aid from developed countries.
We'll leave that there. I'm sure you'll hear more about that later on. The US President Donald Trump speaking on the White House lawn there, explaining to the assembled media why the United States has withdrawn from the Paris Climate Agreement. We will renegotiate a deal that is fair, said Trump. There is an inherent contradiction there that Trump supporters won't like me saying, but there is. Trump is right. Deindustrializing the world is a terrible thing. It costs jobs. It costs growth. It costs prosperity. Of course it does. But why would you want to renegotiate a deal is the question there. We know, you and I, that the climate change hoax is ultimately about the overall Agenda 21, which is a depopulation agenda, culling the population through unemployment, hunger, squeezing us financially, crushing us with rising energy bills, unemployment, hunger, and starvation. So that was Donald Trump there. It is 16 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show for Thursday, the 1st of June 2017. It's time for a tune, I tells you. Time for a bit of a tune. Some of your tweets when we come back. You're tweeting about the Philippines shooting, which some media sources have already claimed is the work of ISIS. How could they know that? It's a good question, isn't it? I would have thought so anyway. Europe's number one independent talk show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. This is Bruce Springsteen from 1987. I was in Mallorca as a young lad when I first heard this. It's Tunnel of Love.
That man sitting on a little stool takes the money from my hand while his eyes take a walk all over you. Hands me two tickets, smiles, whispers good luck. Well, cuddle up, angel, cuddle up, my little dove. Well, ride down, baby, into this tunnel of love. Well, I feel a
Santa Ponsa, 1987, Santa Ponsa. There was a DJ parked by the pool with several boxes of LPs. But the DJ was a pisshead and spent most of the time sleeping on a sun lounger. And I began playing Tunnel of Love by The Boss there. That's a true story, Santa Ponsa, 87. This is the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 11 and a half minutes or 12 minutes at the top of the hour. Donald Trump is now bragging that he keeps his promises. I keep my promises. I keep my promises, he said. That is why we're pulling out of the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. You didn't keep your promises about Hillary, though, did you there, Donald, old boy? I wonder, is it because you're rather fond of old Hillary and old Bill and old George H.W.? And all the rest of the cartel didn't keep that particular promise. We're going to take a very quick break, back in a minute with the rest of Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Let's try that again, will we? I told you it was one of those days, didn't I? Let's try that again. It's been one of those days, all right. Try that again. We'll be back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. A big hello to Stuart, who's listening in Birmingham. Stuart, how are you? He says he's been listening on YouTube in the past, but lately has been able to hear the programme live. Thank you very much, Stuart. One or two reports about explosions in Rome. Is that right? Where are those reports coming from? Am I on the BBC News page? Am I on the BBC News page? Oh, yeah, the BBC are generally pretty slow, to be honest. So if I put Rome into Reuters, what will Reuters say? Well, they say something is going on in Rome, at the old Vatican. There's a fire there, apparently. There's a fire near the Pope's domestic residence. They're not saying much about a bomb yet. A fire. Nothing about an explosion, a fire. There's a fire there, apparently. There you go. Always trust old Reuters. They're always on the scene there. 9 minutes to the top of the hour. So have an interesting weekend ahead. I'll be back with you, of course, live on Sunday with Sunday View. I was going to do a programme tomorrow with Marwa Osman, but something has come up and we can't do it. I'm going to get her on the programme on Monday. Remarkable woman based in Beirut. We'll do a show, of course, as usual on Sunday morning. I'm going to see Robbie Williams on Saturday at the City of Manchester Stadium. You know, I mentioned this on the programme before, Caroline and myself are very, very big fans of live music. We like live music, live entertainment. And we do go and see live concerts when we can. We can't always, but when we can. So we're going to see Robbie. Apparently the police here have put out a statement saying that queues later on are likely at the venue because the security is going to be absolutely massive, apparently, with people told not to bring bags and don't be wearing jackets and all that sort of stuff. So I'm going to observe that on Saturday. I also, many months ago, got some tickets for the Kings of Leon, which are due to be the first act to play at the arena after the bombing. They're due to be at the arena a week tomorrow. But I have a sinking feeling that show will be cancelled. There isn't any news of it yet, but it might very well be cancelled. So apparently the security is going to be mega over the weekend in the city. A lot of things happening. A testimonial match at Old Trafford Football Stadium. the event on Sunday for the victims. Don't get me started on that garbage. Robbie Williams is here. He's in the city tomorrow and Saturday at the Etihad Stadium where Manchester City plays. I'm going to be observing that from the scene, so I'll tell you what I observe on Sunday View on Sunday morning. A lot of that is, of course, interesting to us. There you go. Well, I've got some terrific guests lined up next week as well. In the coming weeks, we're going to do a lot on the nature of reality. We're going to be digging into areas that many, many, many other programmes will not dare dig into. We're going to tread and walk roads that others dare not tread. Right. Make an ad out of that. Yeah, we're going to be looking into things that, again, some of the work that David explores in his books, we're going to be talking about some of those issues in the coming weeks. Phantom Self and stuff like that we'll be doing as well, which I know will be of great interest to some of our listeners. We will, of course, next week pay attention to the election cycle, to what's happening, who's saying what, how it's being reported, most importantly, and we'll have a close look at some of those election polls, because they're narrowing. They are very seriously narrowing. Apparently, the lead at the very beginning, at the outset, was 14, 15, 16 points was the lead. Now, some pollsters are saying that the lead might be as low as 4 points between Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn. And I know this is causing a great excitement amongst those who signed up to become members of the Labour Party 18 months ago so that they could vote Jeremy Corbyn in as leader of the party. Great excitement. So there is there. They'll be disappointed even if Corbyn does become Prime Minister, but that doesn't matter. We'll see how it goes. Right, that's nearly the end of it then for Thursday. Massive thanks to Mike Rivero, my only guest today. That Ian Plimer audio I played you is available on YouTube. It's been tweeted already. Do share it with people. It is factually and historically accurate. Man-made climate change is utter garbage, and it's part of the most sinister agenda there is. So do share that with people. Get them listening to it and point them to the eminent qualifications of Ian Plimer if they argue with you, if they dare argue with you. Big thanks to Simon Stewart for looking after YouTube for me. Thank you, Simon. Simon will be beavering away getting Mike Rivero and the monologue onto YouTube overnight. I'll have the podcast of this programme on line really soon in case you missed any of the programme. The podcast will be online as well. Thanks to Aaron for continuing to rebuild richieallen.co.uk. Big thanks to Aaron for that as well. And that's really it. Millie tells me on Twitter it's very sad to be going to Robbie Williams. We love live music, Millie. I'm more of an arena rock fan. But I like some of Robbie Williams' music, so I'm happy enough to go along and have a good night out. A good night out. It's very subjective. Music is subjective, isn't it? One man's or one woman's meat is another man or woman's poison. Let's be honest about that. Going to leave you and love you with something you might approve of. Some Neil Young then. How about that? You might approve of that. That was Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Thanks for listening to it. Look after yourselves and one another. Have a marvellous weekend. Speak to you on Sunday View, 11 a.m. Sunday morning. Bye now.